Roll call.
Roll call for Tuesday, February 5th. Anderson, District 2.
Here.
Anderson, District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Here.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstader.
Here.
Driscoll.
Here.
Amrick.
Here.
Esquibel. Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks. Hines,
here.
Johnson,
here.
Landon,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Nutting,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Rothfuss,
here.
Schiffer,
here.
Scott,
here.
Von Platern,
here.
President Ross.
Here.
30 present.
Prayer by Pastor Huck.
Good morning. Want to give a special prayer for Senator Perkins. His father-in-law is in hospice, and I want to pray for you today and pray for your father-in-law. Father in heaven, thank you for this new day. Thank you for this new set of downs, so to speak, that you've given us to work with. Thanks for the Senate that's here today and that's gathered. I pray that each person senses the importance of their being here at this time. Father, the challenges of our day are great. And we pray for the champions in this arena to match these challenges. Yesterday I read about Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, a valiant warrior of Kabzeel. On a snowy day he chased a lion into a pit and he killed it. Benaiah was the right person at the right time to take on his challenges of his day. Lord, I pray that the people here today realize that their importance and that they are champions in our government. They've been elected because of their unique set of skills and abilities. And I pray that each person is fully effective in applying their skills, experience, and wisdom, even this day. In addition, I pray for the synergy of these skills and experiences, that somehow the strength of the differences will work together in a way that's good for the state and that engages your favor. Finally, Lord, I pray that this Senate knows that there are people praying for them. I'm in several arenas that small groups and big groups that are praying for our government and praying for them. I pray that they feel that and sense that. I know they see the criticism and the critics, but I pray, God, they sense your presence and they sense the prayers that are lifting them up. I pray that you'd bless these men and women today, that they would be skillful. And Lord, I lift up Senator Perkins as his father-in-law is walking his last lap of life, and I pray for this lap. I know it can be tough, and I pray that the right words are said, and there's comfort that they recognize is from you. I pray these things in Jesus' name.
Amen. Amen.
Please join me at Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Kim. Reading correction and approval of the journal. Will the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 4th, 2013, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jim L. Anderson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the Journal Committee report. Are there any objections? Hearing none, the report is adopted. Doctor of the day today is Robert Orovec from Cheyenne. There is, once again, no nurse of the day. Today in Wyoming history, 1927, the meadowlark was designated as the official state bird. Thought for the day comes from Ronald Reagan. Government's first duty is to protect the people, not run their lives. Just a moment to thank the staff and all those hands that got together to make us lunch yesterday and to have our normal yearly salad by committee. Senators, I'd wish that you would all give them a round of applause. Messages from the House.
February the 4th, 2013, from the House of Representatives. Message number 260, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing a bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill number 260, Game and Fish Licenses Fees 3. Ayes 8, noes 52. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
House bills on first reading. House Bill 103, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 103, Regulation of Firearm State Preemption. Sponsored by Representative Yagi. An act relating to firearms passed the House on third reading, ayes 53, no 6, excused 1.
Not laughing at the bill. House Bill 103 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary.
I've got that somewhere.
I don't think I can introduce any more bills right now. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. President. Oh, Mr. President.
Yes.
You have a choice. You can take the chariot to the next world or listen to 3 hours of budget.
I take the chariot to the next world.
Well, we ought to all sing you happy birthday.
Thank you.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Tony. Happy birthday to you.
I knew something was going to happen. I just didn't know when. Looking good, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. By the way, members of the Senate, it is not only my birthday, but it's Katie Heaton's birthday. She's worked for the Senate for 34 years, and she's 28 years younger than I am. Oh, my. That was good. Okay. Senator Astor.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the
Yes, you may.
Members of the Senate have over here sitting with me Audrey Duke. She's from the Children's Resource Center up from Senator Coe's neck of the woods. Down here kind of seeing how things work out, does a little work with the kids and the child developmental centers and things, but I'd like you to welcome her to the Senate.
Yeah. Welcome to the Senate, and hope you enjoy your day. As you can tell, we have a little bit more fun than the House of Representatives. Mr. Senator Hicks.
No.
Nothing? All right. Okay. House Bill 104. Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I, and
not that I object to getting one or 104 or 103, but before we do that, barring objection, I would ask that House Bill 175 engrossed, Juvenile Citations Notification by Law Enforcement, sponsored by Representative Throne, be re-referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue.
Without objection, House Bill 175 will be re-referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 104, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 104, Firearm Protection Act, sponsored by Representative Croker, an act relating to firearms. Passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 46, noes 13, excused 1.
House Bill 104 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 215, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 215, State Investment for a Public Purpose, sponsored by Representative Patton, an act relating to state government. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 33, noes 26, excused 1.
House Bill 215 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 105, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 105, Citizens and Students Self-Defense Act, sponsored by Representative Yagi, an act relating to firearms. Passed the House on third reading in an amended form, ayes 46, noes 13, excused 1.
House Bill 105 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. House Bill 225, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 225, Transfer of Ownership of Livestock and Brands, sponsored by Representative Somers, an act relating to brands. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 59, excused 1.
House Bill 225 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 109, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 109, Interstate Shipment of State-Inspected Meats, sponsored by Representative Wallace, an act relating to interstate shipment of meat and poultry. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1.
House Bill 109 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 205, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 205, Motor Vehicle Weight Restrictions Exceptions, sponsored by Representative Northrup, an act relating to motor vehicles. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 56, noes 3, excused 1.
House Bill 205 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. House Bill 145, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill Number 145, Insurance Coverage for Inherited Enzymatic Disorders, sponsored by Representative Dan Zwanitzer, an act relating to insurance. Passed the House on third reading, ayes 47, noes 12, excused 1.
House Bill 145 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
February the 5th, 2013, Mr. President, your Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 41, Engrossed, Wild Bison Licenses, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, and Kraft, excuse, Senator Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 5th, 2013, Mr. President, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 29, Game Licenses, Landowner Coupons, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, and Kraft. Excuse Senator Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 5th, 2013. Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 28, Disabled Hunter Programs, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, and Kraft. Excuse Senator Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 5th, 2013. Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 110, engrossed, off-road vehicle gasoline tax distribution sunset, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Christensen, Kraft. Excuse Senator Driscoll, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 5th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Election and Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 2, engrossed, Election Code Revisions, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 5th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 3, Effective Financing Statements Duration, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 5th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 9, engrossed, Election Code Revisions 2, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 4th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 80, engrossed, Health Care Provider Retention Program Sunset Date, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February the 4th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 92, Interference with Emergency Calls, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February the 4th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 95, Railroad Crossing On-Track Vehicles, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. February the 4th, 2013, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 100, engrossed, Vehicle Registration Fees, Assistive Devices, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Cooper, Escobel, Landon, Schiffer, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Thank you, birthday boy. We're doing business over here. Mr. President, we do have a consent list. Folks, it's the entire green sheet, but we've eliminated the first one, which is Senate File 142, and you'll see that there are amendments out. With that, Mr. President, I move the following consent list on third reading. Senate File 153, Unemployment Compensation Direct Sales. Senate File 155, Big Game Licenses, Archery Licenses, and House Bill 223, Public Records Institutions of Higher Education.
Would any member of the Senate like any of the bills removed from the consent list? Hearing none. Oh, Senator Dockstader?
Mr. President, House Bill 223, Public Records Institutions of Higher Education.
House Bill 223 has been removed from the consent list. Any others? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 153, Unemployment Compensation Direct Sales, and Senate File 155, Big Game Licenses, Archery Licenses. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns? Case,
aye.
Christensen,
aye.
Coe,
aye.
Cooper,
aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstader,
aye.
Driscoll,
aye.
Amrick,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Hines,
aye.
Johnson,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Nutting,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Platern, President Ross?
Aye.
30 ayes. Senate File 153, are there any changes? Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 153, 30 ayes. Senate File 155, are there any changes? Case, aye to no. Schiffer, aye to no. Kraft, aye to no.
Bebout,
aye to no. Hastert, aye to no. Hines, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 155, 24 ayes, 6 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 153 and Senate File 155 have passed the Senate. Senate File 142, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 142, Utilities Ratemaking, sponsored by Senator Case, an act relating to utilities. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
We have some amendments. The reading clerk will read in third reading amendment number one to Senate File 142.
Senate File 142, third reading amendment number one, delete the Senate Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move reading amendment number one to Senate File 142. Mr. President, this is a technical correction only, and it deals with the fact that the word commission determines was repeated in the Standing Committee Amendment. So if you still have your Standing Committee Amendment handy, that we passed on 2 days ago, you would see that on line 10, the words, the commission determines the cost, and then there's a repeat on line 12 of the words determined by the commission. All this does is clarify that. All the parties agree it doesn't do anything more than that. It's a technical correction only. I'd ask for your support.
Any discussion? Question has been called. All those in favor of third reading amendment number one to Senate File 142, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion as amendment has been adopted. I have a second third reading amendment number two, which I ask the reading clerk to read in, please.
Senate File 142, third reading amendment number two, page 2, line 6.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, and at this time I would move
Second reading amendment, our third reading amendment number 2 to Senate file 142. Ladies and gentlemen, we had quite a conversation the other last Friday in regard to this bill, and I'm not going to go back over all that. I think I hope at least attempted to make myself clear. As I look at this bill, it's not real clear to me what it attempts to do, and it was amended heavily the first day, and then we have another amendment this morning, and I still don't think that it's clear what this bill does, but we'll talk more about that when we get back on the bill. So in regard to the amendment, page 2, line 6, what this amendment attempts to do is to recognize negotiations that might currently be in place. And that my best information is that there is a company that is currently involved with negotiations in regard to this very process that we're looking at. And this bill is, I think, specific and is directed right at wind. We know that there are other renewable things out there, geothermal and even natural gas, but this is directed, this is special in the sense it goes right at the wind. Well, anyway, there are negotiations that are taking place. I am hesitant for us to pass some bit of legislation that then goes back and intervenes in any kind of conversation that's currently taking place that really, I think, puts business at a disadvantage. So this amendment, what it does is it simply says that the negotiations are ongoing, that this is not the intent of this bill to intervene with that. So before the word or after the word utility, line 2, or line page 2, line 6, would insert for any rate application for which a utility receives indicative pricing from utilities after February 1st. And so that would recognize that period of time there that we're currently in. I won't talk a long time about it. We'll get back on the bill. But I would simply say, and I'll read more information later, but this has been the most difficult bill I've ever seen to try to fix and bring fairness to, because I really don't understand what it's trying to do. And if you don't know what's broke, it's so broken, it's difficult to fix. I'll later read a statement from an expert, perhaps a bias, in that regard. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll just leave that to your care. I would ask your favorable consideration on this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would ask the Senate to resist this amendment. Mr. President, it is a question of fairness. If you're a rate payer buying electricity in Wyoming, do you want your company to pay the avoided cost rate to these projects, or do you want a special rate just for wind that's going to be more expensive? And, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that you want to pay more for your electricity. And I don't think it's fair to use the system of public utility rates to drive extra money towards a particular resource. Mr. Chairman, what this does is tell the Commission they have to follow the federal law and that to pay no more. How are the crackers, Senator Burns? To pay no more than the avoided cost of the utility and to not differentiate based on technology so that a cogeneration facility gets paid the same amount as a solar facility gets paid the same amount as a hydro facility. Why do we have a special rate for one type of technology? We're not supposed to do that under PURPA, and we need to have a level playing field and not subsidize one particular technology. It's not fair to ratepayers.
Further discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I too rise in opposition to this amendment. And let's remember, and I agree with my colleague from across the mountains, federal law specifically prohibits picking a winner like this. And that's what the PSC has done by setting up two separate rates for the avoidance cost. They have said we are going to favor one type of generation over another. What does the state of Wyoming have? The state of Wyoming has wonderful wind resources. Excellent. The state of Wyoming also has excellence and an abundance of, for example, natural gas. If we can get back compliance with the PURPA federal law, it means we say we're not going to favor a specific industry over another one. And particularly in this state, We need to avoid that. Our economy is based, quite frankly, on power generation, both carbon and natural. What we're trying to get at here is say, for the benefit of our consumers, we're going to go with a single avoidance cost structure. And that's all it does. We're not going to pick favorites here on the floor of the Senate. We're going to let the market do that. And that's what PURPA is trying to get at. It puts us in compliance with them. But also, it was one of the things the federal agencies said, we're going to make sure we take care of our consumers. And that's what this bill does. It says we're going to take care of them.
Senator Meyer.
The amendment actually just says that we're not going to go back in and get into contracts that have already been negotiated or contracts that are being negotiated and ex post facto come in the back door and say, well, this is the law. We don't care if you negotiated a price for a higher price under the old regulatory scheme. But what this says is that going forward, this is a regulatory scheme. But we're not going to go back into negotiated prices and contracts and upset the apple cart. And so I think this is probably an amendment that basically is in line with our Constitution, and I think it's a good amendment.
Further discussion? Senator Case, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. In reply to the last speaker, I don't think it does that. Because the bill becomes effective with the enactment date. And obviously you can't, if there's deals already done beforehand that are in place, that's that. If there are rates that have been extended, that's that. What this talks about is negotiations. People that are in negotiations right now, and they receive indicative pricing. I'm not totally clear what indicative pricing says, but they're trying to preserve them to reach back in time and say that's what's going to apply going forward. Well, they weren't supposed to be doing it in the first place because PURPA says there's only one rate that's supposed to be extended. This is not a good thing for consumers to pay more for electricity than they should have to pay, and the federal law provides. And so I think what this is trying to do is to say, well, we've been talking about something higher, and we talked about it back in November, and now this bill comes about, but now since we were already talking in November, we don't have to worry about it because that was what we call indicative pricing. And that's not fair, Mr. President. That's not a signed contract. That's not a deal. That's something tenuous. Not fair. Oppose the amendment.
Further discussion before the sponsor takes its second time. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I think much of what has been said is true in regard to the purpose of what they're trying to accomplish. I think that the good senator, the sponsor, indicated this is exactly what it's trying to do, is go back, and that those negotiations that are in place now would not be affected by the outcome of this bill, but everything else going forward would be affected. So what I'm trying to do is just simply say, in terms of fairness, that this negotiation has spent, and these people have money invested. They have a huge amount of money invested coming up to this, and I won't give the whole history of that. But this simply says, in all they have invested, they have negotiations in place, and then along comes this bill, and it suddenly changes the rules of the game. Let them finish the game with the rules that they have. That's what this does. So with that, you know, up or down, we're just trying to bring a little bit of fairness. I agree but this is one relatively small project. FERC, the utilities are very capable of looking out after themselves. They've got say in this to how far they can go with this, or if they want to have a power purchase agreement. So there's things in place that will govern this, for the protection of the consumer, PSC, FERC, and certainly the utility. So with that, I'll just leave it up to you, but the idea being is not to change the rules in the middle of the game. I'd call for a question, Mr. President.
Question is, shall third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 142 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment has failed. We have another amendment, third reading amendment number 3, Senate File 142. The reading clerk will read in the amendment.
Senate File 142, third reading amendment number 3, page 2, line 6.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 142 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Folks, this time we talk about renewable portfolio standards. And, Mr. Chairman, essentially what that is the more liberal state to the west of us out here, some of their consumers like to buy green energy at a higher price. Well, to most of us, an electron. But what this basically allows and says is that any generator, whether they generate 1 megawatt or 1,000 megawatts, they're entitled to a bite of that apple, to at least be in the bidding process. Currently now, I think we had some discussion on the first reading that it was only folks that could generate over 80 megawatts. Well, in the price for the renewable portfolio standards may be, and it sometimes probably is, higher than the avoided cost in this section. And I think it's just fair to allow anybody that generates power in Wyoming to have an opportunity to be in that process. So it just says that essentially that this subsection doesn't have anything to do with that. If they can sell it higher than what the avoided cost is in the bidding process, then they're allowed to sell it higher. Any other situation, the avoided cost stays exactly the same as what it is. So it just says that the people out in California are so bent on paying more for energy than what it actually costs, we're not going to inhibit our Wyoming generators for having to take less for it. That's what the amendment tries to do. It's written rather broadly to capture that. So I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a question for the sponsor of the amendment or other individuals who certainly, I think I'm like most of us, we kind of struggle with the technical aspects of this and exactly how it works. But, Mr. President, my question is this. I'd understand how this amendment affects what happens in our power production and our rate base now. And what I mean by that, Mr. President, is that I believe the preeminent power producer and provider in our state simply looks at its system-wide delivery costs, and then Wyoming is roughly 19% or so of that, and then regardless of what part of the power grid it comes from, that so if it's green energy or it's carbon-produced energy or whether it's hydroelectric, whatever it is, all that goes into the mix, Mr. President, and I think, and then Wyoming is simply, we get one-third of the, 1/20th or 1/19th of the cost of that. Now, I know on the other end, Mr. President, I've heard representatives from this preeminent power producer and provider in the state of Wyoming say that when they get a bonus for the portfolio standard for these RPSs, these renewable portfolio standards, when they get a bonus, there's a premium paid from various states, and it's not just the long, funny state shape that covers most of the western part of the United States, but there are some other states out there that are in the grid in this energy area that's covered by this producer as well. When they pay that premium, then that also goes in, and then that goes into the entire mix. So we do get the benefit of those higher things, but I've never heard, and I don't understand if ultimately, and this is what it really comes down to, Mr. President, are we subsidizing in our rate base for Wyoming electric users? In our base, are we somehow subsidizing the renewable portfolio standards of states when we don't have that? And if someone can help me and help enlighten us this, and whether this enhances that or whether it's off to the side and it doesn't affect that, I'd sure like to know before I vote on this amendment.
Discussion? Senator Hicks?
Mr. President, to answer that question, at least in a good portion of my Senate district, we have a different power provider that wheels up power, and then the local cooperatives have to buy that. And as the good senator alluded to, is we have two states to the south of us that have passed state legislation that requires, under state law, a percentage of that into renewables. And what that effectively does is our coal is generated at 5 or 6 cents a kilowatt hour, some somewhere in that ballpark. And some of this green power energy, especially coming from these solar arrays, is 56 cents a kilowatt hour. Well, what happens is working with my local cooperatives, which there's 44 local cooperatives that buy power from this particular generator, is they pass the same cost on to a Wyoming consumer as they do to our two neighbors to the south. So, in effect, to answer the good senator's question is the consumers in Wyoming are now subsidizing the consumers to our neighbors in Colorado and our neighbors in New Mexico because they passed state laws that says there will be a percentage of that green power portfolio. So we are absorbing that cost with that particular power generating entity that wheels that back to the local cooperative. So I hope that answers the good senator from Natrona Counties, but that's the scenario, at least with that particular power generator.
Senator Ruffus.
Mr. President, my understanding from a discussion with our largest power producer is exactly the opposite of what the good gentleman from Carbon County indicated, which is that those renewable power purchasing agreements are excluded from our rate base. I had a conversation about 2 years ago now specifically to that point. That information could be obsolete at this point. I don't know if anything has changed since that time. But when I did ask those questions, those agreements, since we don't have one and those states do, that is removed from the rate-based calculations or calculated separately based on their interest in a complicated formula, based on my understanding. Again, that was based on one conversation, but that one conversation indicated that it was not included. I wish we had somebody here who was actually on the PSC at some point that would have a better answer, but my understanding is that it's not included.
Senator Bebout, Mr. Vice President.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And my understanding is, if I understand correctly what my colleague from Albany County just said, that presently now Wyoming consumers are subsidizing in other states the high cost of wind generation. And it's already built in. It's already happened. And there's not anything we can really do about that at this particular time. And I think that percentage is about 16%. So that is, in fact, what we are doing now. We are subsidizing other states for their higher cost of electrical generation, primarily wind, and it's in our rate base for the Wyoming consumers.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, we've got dispute as to the facts, but, Mr. Chairman, the real question is, what does this amendment do on that score? And that's what I'm unclear about, whether this amendment commits us to subsidizing those other ones or goes the other way. And I would hope that somebody, the proponent of the amendment or somebody else, could tell us what the effect of this amendment, Mr. President, which is what we got to vote on right now, is going to be on this situation of whether we're subsidizing the green enthusiasms elsewhere.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to say I rise with green enthusiasm, but I don't. But with enthusiasm. Mr. Chairman, let me, and I'm not going to get into whether we see in our rates a pass-through to our consumers to subsidize in some other state. That is what it is, and I agree with what's been said. But in terms of what this amendment does, this amendment, again, picks a winner. It says we are going to go with a company that produces renewable portfolio standards, which means we are endorsing a higher rate for the promotion of those standards as opposed to, for example, we're picking a winner here. And the winner we're picking is higher cost. That's why other states have to mandate that. That's why our neighbors have those laws. Wyoming is always elected not to do that. We don't pick winners. We produce both, and we produce both renewable generation and carbon generation, and we're really good at it. But we've tried to step back and say, we're not going to pick a winner, which is what this does. It says we're going to pick, and the winner is going to be renewable. And renewable is more expensive. And that's what this amendment tries to do. It tries to pick a winner. My suggestion is defeat this amendment. Let the market pick who's going to come out on top. And I suggest to you that if you let the market play out, it is to the benefit of all our consumers, whether they be from the big boy or from our co-ops or from our co-ops up in the northwest or northeastern part of the state. Give us the opportunity to have an open market, and I believe we would show a significant benefit for our people of the state that buy electricity. I urge you to vote no on this amendment.
Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you. I'm rising against the amendment as well. I think you all have got a flavor of how complicated electric power rate setting is. I've had the great non-pleasure of participating in major rate cases in Wyoming on these issues. But, Mr. Chairman, this bill is just about the PURPA-qualifying facilities, which are the renewable facilities and co-generated facilities that are less than 80 megawatts. Now, bigger facilities, their power is purchased and they enter. There's two ways. Either the power company builds something themselves or they bid it out. It's all bid. And what they choose to build, the biggest power company in the state assures us that they're not choosing a particular technology in Wyoming because of what other states say they should choose in terms of technology. I kind of disagree with them on that. But the one issue that does happen, and it gets at a couple of things, is all these states that are connected in that big system proportionally share on the major costs, the major costs of transmission lines and the major costs of large power facilities. And so we do pay 16 or 17% of all those costs. You could call that a subsidy or not. The power company says, we chose that particular technology because it was the right thing to do. We're not choosing that because Oregon says. And since it's the right thing to do, everybody's going to share. You see how difficult it gets. Now this, there's a couple of programs. And I think this whole amendment mixes up a couple of things. There is a program, I believe it's marketed under the term Blue Sky, where a customer can actually pay a little bit extra on their bill for green energy. And that program is alive and well, but that does not have anything to do with a renewable portfolio standard. And a renewable portfolio standard is when a state says, we want to be 25% such and such energy by a particular time. Well, we can accommodate those other states through the bidding process where the big electric company might wheel power to that state, or I suppose it's possible for the power company to buy that in a kind of a separate transaction. But nothing in our bill prevents that from happening. But I do think the amendment's just a little bit mixed up, Mr. Chairman, mixing a couple of things. There's a gem of an idea, but I don't think that this amendment gets where it does, and I think it just kind of messes thing up, frankly, Mr. President. I'd ask we defeat it.
Further discussion, Senator Meyer for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I want to talk specifically to the last two presenters here, and let's talk about what this amendment does. And it goes directly into the bidding process, which the good senator from Fremont County talked about, that it opens that up to say that when that big utility has to meet a renewable portfolio standard on the energy it delivers to another state who has made that decision in their state to have a certain percentage green energy, that the folks 80 and under get an opportunity to be in that bidding process, which the good senator from Fremont County suggested. That's what it says. Now, how does that work? Well, today, if the bill passes, then that big utility company can buy that at the avoided cost, which was assumed to be around 5 cents. Now, we know in a lot of these renewable products, it costs more than 5 cents to produce that energy. So you're not going to get any renewable energy in Wyoming at all if you have to provide, if your market is less than your cost of production. You know, because you don't make it up on volume, boys. So what we're doing here is saying that in those circumstances where that big energy company has to go out and bid for that portfolio standard in another state, and there's a block of energy that they're bidding for, that somebody in Wyoming who's producing energy has the option to enter into that and see if they can bid it at a price in which they can produce it for or a little bit more and make some money. That's all this does. It lets the marketplace actually determine by the bidding process as to whether or not there are renewable energy generators in the state of Wyoming. If you don't pass this amendment, what you have is a bill that says to renewable to people who want to produce renewable energy that you have to produce it at 5 cents. And that's at today's technology, it's not there. Maybe it'll be there in 20 or 30 years. We don't know. Maybe solar will go to 50 cents down to 2.3 cents or 4 cents. But maybe that's 20 or 30 years out. Wind might go down to a nickel. But that's probably a decade or more out. All this says is that when that state out there that says they want 25% of their energy in renewable, and they know, their consumers know, that it's going to cost them more to get there, that these guys will be able, in Wyoming, to come in and say, I want a shot at that. I'll bid it at 9 cents, and I can make a little money at 9, but I can't at 5. And it goes right into that process that the good senator from Lander for Fremont County talked about. When the big companies have two choices, they can either bid it out or they can do it themselves. This just allows for that process to occur, that generators in Wyoming have the option to enter into that bidding process. It does that and nothing more. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Question is, shall third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 142 pass? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment fails. Discussion on the bill. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, I sat and listened very carefully to the debate and discussion, and it still leads me back to the point. I heard such things like completely opposite, and I heard one point of view, and then I heard another point of view of completely opposite. Another person says, it's my understanding is this, and another person says, well, my understanding is that. Another person said, I think it was a sponsor. Now, just wait a minute. This is a very complicated formula here. Wait a moment, and I'll tell you all about it. I ask, you know, what are we doing here? I think even the sponsor said the flavor of this, of how complicated that it is. And it is. And we've got a great flavor for that. I would just simply say, if there's any thought in your mind that this is an important issue, it is. I agree. But it's so important that I think it deserves an interim. And I think perhaps the correct committee would be the committee of the sponsor. He has that kind of knowledge. But I think that it's too soon for us to move this forward with the idea we're not fully aware of what the consequences might be. And I think if there was ever material for an interim, this is it. This bill came quickly. Came to committee. It has a late high number on it. It came before us just like that. And quite frankly, it came so quickly that I was taken by surprise by it and didn't really have all my arguments framed last Friday. But the point of it is, I think this bill needs to be defeated at this time and then brought back in an interim, because it is a very important thing. We should not just take a pot shot at it like I think we would do if we were to pass this. I urge your defeat of the bill.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, you know, there's some discussion on the last few amendments that came through, and I recall something about solar energy that the power company in another state had to pay 56 cents per kilowatt. And so I'm assuming that the state, wherever they're paying 56 cents for solar, they're probably paying 9 or 10 or 12 cents for wind. And that's being passed back through to the Wyoming consumer on a proportional basis. That's the testimony that we heard on, you know, by and large. And so I'm kind of scratching my head saying, well, why are we allowing the states in the South to build these renewable energy generation stations, facilities, and we're essentially proportionally paying for them, but we're going to prohibit anybody in Wyoming to be able to build them profitably if this bill passes? That just doesn't make sense.
Further discussion? Senator Case.
Okay, Mr. President, we're only dealing with a certain type of relatively small power plants. They're less than 80 megawatts, they're greater than 10 megawatts, and they're such type of plants that qualify under the federal law for requiring the utility to buy their output. The plants are renewable plants or gas plants that have an efficient way of utilizing waste heat. So those plants are required under federal law, and also it's been the policy in Wyoming, with one exception, to give them the net avoided cost rate, meaning, look, we want to encourage renewable energy, but we don't want to penalize consumers, so we will while we're required to buy that power, the rate that we're going to extend to them is the rate that the utility otherwise would have incurred if it would have bought or built a plant. Now, in Wyoming, we didn't exactly follow that. We started to think it might be a good idea to give a little extra to a certain type of power to help them to develop. That violated the federal tenet of this whole thing, and it violated the fact that renewable is good as long as we don't have to pay any more for it than we otherwise would have. And that's all this talks about. That's all this bill does. It's actually very simple. Yes, there's a lot of complications. What about things that are bigger than 80 megawatts? Well, that's all bid anyway. That's where the big wind boys are, and that's where the big power plants are about, bigger than 80 megawatts. This bill doesn't affect that in the least. That's a bidding process, and the market prevails. Yes, the federal boys in Washington have put their finger on that scale because they've given them extended the production tax credit, but that's not our deal. So, we're overcomplicating this thing. Do you want ratepayers to pay more than they have to? Do you want ratepayers to pay an addition above and beyond what the power company would otherwise have been able to obtain the power for? Why in the world would you want to pay more? This is a good bill. I ask that you move it on. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion? Senate File 142, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe? Cooper?
No.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
No.
Hastert? Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer? Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 19 ayes, 11 noes.
Senate File 142, having received the affirmative vote
of the majority of the members elected to the Senate. Senate File 142 has passed the Senate. Senate File 223, third reading, or House Bill 223, third reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 223, Public Record Institution of Higher Education, sponsored by Representative Brown, an act relating to public records, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Brought this back up for consideration. Appreciate the body's patience in allowing me to do this, but I felt like we were a little bit rushed on Friday. Everybody was ready to go home and rushing out of here, and we had something of a lot of importance to talk about. We have an institution over there where we spend a lot of money, tens of millions of dollars. And I'm an aye vote for those votes on the university. It seems like they've been given what they've been asked for, and maybe sometimes even when they don't ask, they get it. And I'm just saying that with something that important, where we're spending that much money repetitively each year, that we ask for a little consideration when we're going to deal with something as important as dealing with the president of the institution. Took the tour there Saturday instead of going home so I could take a look around the university. We've got a real treasure over there. That's something to be proud of. I don't know that the state appreciates all that we have over there. You think about it. We only got 500,000 people in this state, and look what we've built over there for them. It's a real treasure over in Laramie. We should be proud of it. But with something that important, I'm just simply asking that we give a little more consideration, a little more transparency to the situation where we hire the president and have a little more openness in the records. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did not stand up on Friday, and I want to commend the senator from the West because I really respect him for what he does with his day job also. And being a former journalist, I was conflicted on this issue, as you can imagine. But here's the reason that I landed where I did. To me, this is a one-time shot at giving the university an opportunity to live up to its word. It's that simple. I heard out in the hall, well, they should have never made a promise they couldn't keep. But you see, they didn't realize that they couldn't keep that promise. This is a human resource issue, and they assumed that they were going to be allowed to keep that promise. And to me, that's important. Wyoming needs to keep its word. And so for this time, I'm going to land in favor of this bill. But I do appreciate the cautions that are thrown out by my colleague and by some people out in the lobby who say, well, if you do this for this one, you're going to do this down the road for every one of them. You're going to hire somebody, you know, to head your education system. What's going to keep you guys from keeping that one private, too? Well, Mr. President, I hope we resist that. I really do. And I'm not so certain. I agree with my colleague from Laramie who said on Friday that I'm not so sure we don't come right back in here and redo this thing. And we may do that. But for today, I think the right thing is to live up to the promises that we made to those candidates over at the university. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Landon. Further discussion? Senator Coe.
Mr. President, thank you. Briefly, you know, one of the things I found out, you know, this isn't about just who the finalists are. This is about all 88 applicants, all of them. We open this up, that becomes public record for all 88. We made a promise to them to keep it confidential. I think that this should be treated like a personnel matter. I think that the executive session statutes protect you when you do that. I was a county commissioner for years, and I know we could go into executive session to discuss personnel matters. This is no different, I don't think. This is a really important bill, and this is something that we need to pass. We need to keep our promise that started when we opened up the search. We told those 88 applicants that we'd keep this confidential. Now we're going to change the rules in midstream. That's not the way to do business. If we want to come back and look at this next year or the year after that, change it or do whatever we need to do, let's do it then. But let's don't change the rules in midstream.
Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, on personnel matters, like most of the time they're private when you're firing somebody, but not so necessarily when you're hiring somebody. And I think in your own business, if you're hiring somebody in your own business, yet, you know, I always call up the last employer. How's this guy doing? You know, how's he work with his peers? I mean, I call up and find out all the information I can about somebody before I hire them. They give you references. So you call people up and you say, maybe not his last one, but maybe the couple time before. So now not only that it's not public, you can't even call up and inquire as to whether or not the guy's doing a good job. So, you know, it really, I think, ties the hands of anybody trying to hire anybody in the state if we go down this road. On firing, yeah, I think those are some very sensitive issues and need to remain private. No doubt about that. But when you hire somebody, you need to be able to really dive in and find out whether the person's going to be able to do the job.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. President, honor for the bill. Folks, there's nothing in this bill that prohibits in any fashion the trustees or their delegates or anybody they designate to contact anybody they want with respect to evaluating personnel, essentially the president. And in fact, if they want to have it open and have the other people, the public, if you will, do the exercise, they're free to do that. All the bill says is that with respect to the trustees, they can limit the inquiry to themselves while they're making the evaluation. And I could tell you that I've seen it with my own adult children working for large companies. And if occasionally they do a spectacular work, or if they do, another company may gain interest in them. And they'll call them, or they'll have a headhunter call them and say, look, we're interested in considering you for a promotion. And in many instances, the employee will say, you know, I'm very happy where I am. But given the right opportunity, I would move on. But I'm not prepared to risk my current employment because I'm happy. I'm doing a good job. And I'm pleased that you would look at me and give me consideration. But when you investigate me, you're going to have to find a way to investigate my background without calling my boss or people I work with. You can call the folks that I used to work with, or we can create a circumstance. But at no point am I prepared to jeopardize my family, my income, or give up what I'm doing to take it. But I think I'd be a good candidate for you. And in this instance, what we know, and I'll tell you, everybody else wants to pick the president. Certainly the faculty would love to choose it, pick their own candidate, and have everybody walk out, and they get to choose the faculty member. And then there's a beholding relationship that exists between the faculty and that president. Certainly the press want to be involved in the selection process. They have a financial interest in getting the information out. That's how they sell pages. But what the question is, and you have to think about it, is how did we set this up constitutionally to make sure that we provide the vehicle and the resources for the trustees who are designated by the Constitution to select this person? We entrust the management to the trustees. How do we delegate to them to make sure that they get not just a qualified candidate, but the very best candidate that they can get? And if they want to go out headhunting and find somebody and solicit somebody that they say, you know, we heard you're doing a spectacular job at this other institution. We have an interest in considering you. Would you be willing to take this job if we offered it? They should be going out and doing that type of recruiting just like companies do. And under that environment, they're going to have to make promises. I agree with my colleague that they have to then find ways to vet the name and to do it. But the press or faculty are not necessarily the only persons entitled or endowed with the power to do investigations. The trustees have the resources to do it. They have the obligation to do it. And they're not looking simply for the best or a qualified applicant, but they're looking for the best applicant on our behalf. And the good news is that person serves at the pleasure of the trustees. If they do make a bad decision, they get to fire them. And we get to take a look at it through the advice and consent process. But this is not about securing a qualified person. It's about going out and reaching out and finding what you think or the trustees think is the very best candidate that we can recruit. I urge you to vote for the bill.
Further discussion. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, neither for or against the bill, but if any of the proponents could explain to you, is there any empirical data that shows that, say, a sitting president at another college had applied for a job and then was retaliated against and fired because he applied for another job? I guess, is this going on? Has this happened where we see mass retaliation against people that apply for other jobs? Just a question.
Senator, Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the last question, the answer is yes. We heard some anecdotal evidence of that. One good piece of evidence is the firm that was asked to conduct the university's search was also asked to conduct another university's search at the same time. That other university did it as an open search, entirely open process. Every piece of information that was available was put online at the same time. They attracted about 20 applicants. We attracted 88, and we had testimony from an individual that said none of the 20 applicants for this other major Tier 1 university would have made our cut. There weren't any sitting presidents. I believe there were very few provosts, and they ended up failing on that search, whereas at the same time we have highly qualified candidates. So in terms of whether it does make a difference, the testimony that was provided to us unequivocally indicates that it does make a difference. I wish I could relate the specific story. We did hear a story in testimony about a particular retaliation incident, and offline I'll find out what that is for you and tell you what the details were. It's certainly not appropriate for open debate.
Further discussion. For your second time, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, folks. If the candidates you want to recruit are a group of people that simply have nothing to lose to apply, that's what you're going to get. If the candidates that you want are doing extraordinary in their business, have nice incomes, good jobs, great respect, and lots to lose by giving their name public unless they know they're going to get the job, if that's the candidate you want, vote for the bill.
Questions on? Senator Dockstader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good discussion. We didn't have time for that discussion Friday on such an important matter. We needed to air this one out a little bit more. It's just simply a call for transparency where tens of millions are spent. Call for the question.
Thank you. Question is, House Bill 223, having been read three separate times. The question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2?
Aye.
Anderson District 28?
No.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquibel? Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Fleetern?
Aye.
President Ross?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 23 ayes, 7 noes.
House Bill 223, having received the affirmative vote of majority members elected to the Senate, House Bill 223 has passed the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business, consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that we resolve the House, or the Senate, resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole to consider only the budget bill, Senate File 1.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Senator Cates. Thank you.
The Committee of the Whole will come to order. The only file for our consideration is House Bill, or Senate File 1. I believe we are on Section 80. Who will discuss the section? Senator Bebout.
Mr. Chairman, did you say Section 80?
Is that right, Senator Bebout?
I believe it is, and I would move Section 80, Department of Corrections.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, in Section 80, Department of Corrections, well, this was what you have before you is a substantial reduction. They made lots of efforts to go forward with the governor's proposed recommendations and with reductions and made very good faith efforts to do that. What we've got and what we did as we went forward was, you'll note that ultimately there was roughly $12,640,000 of proposed reductions, and most of those were accepted, with the exception that we authorized the additional expenditure of $420,000. We'll get to that, why that was we thought that was a good investment, in just a moment. Mr. Chairman, the first thing we did is we did adopt the agency's recommendations to reduce by, you see there, the $11 million there. The reduction consists of one position and also other grant payments and other medical contract services. Mr. Chairman, the medical contract services is very interesting. One of the things that we've done, and one of the things that you know, occasionally, Mr. Chairman, we actually do things right in the Wyoming legislature, and the foresight in building the medium security prison, we've built substantial infirmary services over there where they can house and treat inmates, and because of that, we're able to have, with our contract services, treat and care for many of our inmates as they develop medical problems there, and do it at a substantially lower cost. And so when they went back out and renegotiated the medical contract services, which is where the majority of this comes from, they ultimately became, if I remember right, have developed a cost share with the medical service provider if they can't treat them at the infirmary there at the medium security prison in Torrington, that then there's a cost share if they have to go outside of that. So based on that, they're able to go back and substantially renegotiate the medical contract services for inmate care, and that's where the majority of the savings come from. There was also a transfer of another $1,100,000 of general fund money for 14 positions in over to the Enterprise Technology Services as part of the statewide consolidation. The probably the most notable thing that we did as a JAC is we added $420,000 in footnote number one outlining the agency's proposal. What that is and why we thought that was important was that what we're doing is enhancing, and we'll be doing some additional substance abuse and offender, I believe, mostly substance abuse treatment at the Honor Farm over in Fremont County. In doing that and by expanding that there, we're able to move some residents over there, some inmates over there for that. That type of treatment, and that will enable us to delay having to build out and open an empty wing in the minimum security prison there. The build-out would be approximately $9.8 million for the build-out, and then it would cost about another $17 to $18 million a biennium in staffing if we have to build out that. So it seemed to us that that was an appropriate expenditure for that $420,000. And with that, we'll stand for any questions and to answer any questions. And if there are none, we'll call for the question.
Questions on Section 80. Any discussion? Any discussion on Department of Corrections? You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion to adopt Section 80 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The next section for our consideration is Section 81, Board of Parole. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Section 081, Board of Parole. What we've got in this one, this is a very small department. Ultimately, they offered a number of reductions. The governor denied quite a few of them. And essentially because it's a small agency, and other than a few employees, all it really is mostly for some budget for travel for the Board of Parolee to conduct their hearings as they travel around, as they travel to do those hearings. The governor denied, and the JAC agreed with the denial because of the need to conduct prompt, fair, and impartial hearings throughout the state by the board members. They go and do that. So the only reduction we have here is basically the $4,300 and change, which is simply an ETS transfer. It's not a budget reduction, but just a transfer from the Department of Board of Parole to the Electronic Enterprise Transfer Services. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any discussion on Section 81, Board of Parole? Any discussion? You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion to adopt Section 81, Board of Parole, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay. The next section for our consideration is Section 85, Wyoming Business Council. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move Section 85, Wyoming Business Council. Members of the Senate, the governor's reduction was at $3.148 million, and we further modified that reduction by adding another reduction of $1,012,400, and then we added a footnote requiring the JAC to report to the Joint Minerals Committee justifying the continuation of the community facilities program. Mr. Chairman, I want to be sure and point out to the body that the lion's share of the reductions from the Business Council, and they had no FTE reductions, came from a reduced of the grant program for community facilities program. And that program, if this were to go through, Mr. Chairman, will be see a reduction of $4 million. And the testimony we heard in the committee is that there are some activities going out there, some people looking at trying to apply for these grants. However, I think there's three or four on the drawing table, if you will. And I will tell you that the original budget was $8.5 million starting at the year. And for this part of the year so far, no money has been spent, and there's nothing in the pipeline as to encumbering any of those funds. So that's why the JAC further reduced this amount. There are no questions. I call for the question.
Discussion on Section 85, Wyoming Business Council. Discussion. You've heard the motion, Senator Bebout's motion, that we adopt Section 85, Wyoming Business Council. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That section's carried. Our next section is Section 101, Supreme Court. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 101, Supreme Court.
I ask the body's favorable consideration. What we're doing in Section 121 is
101.
Excuse me, 101. I'm just moving this right along, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad you caught me and stopped me. Save me from myself.
I'm reconsidering that now.
Section 101, Supreme Court, National Body's favorable consideration. What we did is the Supreme Court came out with a number of reductions. Some of them required changes in statutory language. Those bills have worked their way through various sides of this building. What they did is they came with a number of recommendations. Ultimately, to remove about $380,000 in change from their budgets, the JAC adopted those recommendations along with the governor with a couple of modifications. The reductions mostly consist of printing and travel and elimination of two satellite courts and library books. We've seen the bill with respect to the library books already passed through this body. We did allow the Supreme Court had asked made a recommendation to increase spending authority by a little over $291,000 of federal funding to continue efforts in the Children's Justice Project, which we agreed with. The substantial modification came with, and we've heard some of that discussion on the floor in here during this session, Mr. Chairman, and that was that they had recommended closing satellite courts in Powell, Lovell and Du Bois. The JAC has substituted that the closure of those things with a like amount of savings to realize from the elimination of a vacant position. And then I added a footnote number one, which directs the Board of Judges Policy and the administration to study operational changes such as teleconferencing, other types of electronic filing, and other things that would improve efficiency or reduce the costs of operating the satellite courts in Powell, Lovell, and Du Bois. But ultimately, as far for the remainder of this biennium, my understanding is that those satellite courts would remain open under that. That finishes us for the Supreme Court, and would stand for questions, and if there are none, we'd call for the question.
And Senator Perkins, you made reference to footnote number one, but I note that your discussion was with regards to footnote number three. Or is there a discussion? Senator Hine.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I had a question on the other funds, and the one $3.8 million, I assume, was fines and stuff. But where is the $3 million that is listed as other funds on administration? Where does that come from?
Thank you, Senator Hines. Anybody else want to pile on? Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe in the reference to footnote one, it's on the budget bill as footnote one. In your cheat sheet, it's three.
Thank you.
I think that's the variance there. But
thank you, Senator.
In the language of footnote one in the budget, footnote three in the cheat sheet, is closing any of those offices an option? As I read it, it's not. It's more of looking for efficiencies, but taking off the table the closing, which is what was offered by the Supreme Court, I think, in their budget cutting.
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If this should move forward and this footnote passes, they will not close and they're off the table until the Supreme Court has an opportunity to come back and look at different things that might, in fact, make it more cost effective. And then they make that decision, report back to us in April. So we'll have an opportunity to, when we come back in the next session, to review that. However, be sure and understand that in terms of position, there was a vacant position. We captured that position, removed it, and took that money to have the funds there to keep those courts open if, in fact, that's the way we decide to go.
Who's going to answer Senator Hines's question? Senator Perkins?
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking for that, but the $3,800,000 was in the previous budget, so it was in the budget we passed last year. It wasn't anything that we had dealt with in the supplemental budget. But we see the budget there and I'm not sure. I think that's a special revenue fund. Those may be, and I will verify this and get back to and report back later, but that may very well be the Access to Justice Project. And so there was a fee that has been charged to help provide for legal services to indigent and others from a court fee. And I think that may be the Special Revenue Fund, but I will verify that's in the original budget. I'm looking through it now, and I'll report back to the good senator from near Campbell County, up in Campbell County, and to the body later.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And I know it's federal funds, but was there any justification given for this, the Children's Justice Project? It's been ongoing, but the results appear to be somewhat controversial at best. Did they give any justification whether they can turn that around and head the right direction for a change or anything like that?
Discussion? Who'd like to address that? Who would like to address that? Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, there was very little discussion of that as we went through. The Children's Justice Project is, and quite frankly, I'm looking forward as fast as I can to get there.
The whole world waits on you. Sometimes.
Yes, and we're trying to get there as fast as we can, and sometimes you know that technology just is tough to deal with at times. Yeah. So if somebody else has another question, let me continue.
Another question while he looks that up? Would there be another question, Senator Von Flatern?
Just Mr. Chair, just a little more clarification. The good senator from Riverton answered pretty much my question, but is in their consideration, since you saved $40,000, that's great, but is there in their consideration the closing of those satellite courts?
Senator Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, there is. If, in fact, when the Judicial Committee comes back and makes that report to us and we decide that we as the legislature decides, well, we understand that's the only thing to do, then, yeah, that could happen. But what we've done is we put a provision in there to allow that to happen and move forward in a timely manner and see if there's ways we can save them. And if we, in fact, decide to not close them, we have the money there to pay for it.
Okay. Senator Perkins, are you ready?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, what the Supreme Court had advised us with respect to the additional money for the Children's Justice Project was that they requested additional spending fund authority in the Children's Justice Project since the development of the original 2013-2014 budget. They received notification from the Federal Department of Health and Human Services Office of the, for Administration for Children and Families that they were successful in their grant request for additional federal funds. The Children's Justice Project is intended for more timely and permanent solutions in child abuse and neglected cases. While there may be some concerns about it not working, Mr. Chairman, and to some degree, that's not solely related to this, but also as we look at child abuse and neglect cases, through the work of Department of Family Services, through prosecutors and other individuals throughout the state, we're actually, I believe, have made substantial progress in dealing with child abuse and neglect cases. An example of that would be the substantial reductions in out-of-home placements that we've made. We're seeing we have a number of programs around the state that are resulting in with significant increases in graduations from various programs in Natrona County and Evanston and Cheyenne and other places have been very successful in having and graduating substantial numbers of students every year that but for those programs would not be graduating from high school. This body has supported and the legislature as a whole has passed and implemented various things like the single point of entry and other things as we've dealt with rapid response with respect in child neglect cases and when they've been removed substantial reformations in the juvenile justice system and in how we house and substantial reductions in the number of juveniles incarcerated. So I think they're making a lot of progress. Are we there yet? I don't think so. But as the Supreme Court and others continue to try and move forward, I think it's worth that respect. And
thank
that's
you,
my
Senator.
Answer.
Any further discussion? Any further discussion on Section 101? You've heard the motion of Senator Perkins that the committee will hold up Section 101, Supreme Court. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 101 is passed Committee of the Whole. The next section is Section 103, Commission on Judicial Conduct and Ethics. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've moved Section 103, Commission on Judicial Conduct and Ethics. This is a very small department, has one employee. All they did is we adopted the commission's recommendation was to reduce it by $14,000. We made some modifications, only actually ended up with a budget reduction of a little over $9,000. And what that mostly was for is there was a change in the employee and so that there was a different set of benefits that came in with the one employee had changed, one retired, a new one came in. So there was a change in the benefits there, a change in the pay that was there. And also there was some rental space. The former director had actually worked out of their own home, and this one now is in an office. So that's the differences in the budget. I'll stand for questions. If there aren't any, I'd call for the question.
Any discussion on Section 103? Any discussion? You've heard the motion of Senator Perkins to adopt Section 103. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 103 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next section is Section 120, Judicial District 1A. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I think that I can do it this way. Mr. Chairman, I have moved Section 120, Judicial District 1A, Section 121, Judicial District 1B, Section 122, Judicial District 2A, Section 123, Judicial District 2B, Section 124, Judicial District 3B, Section 125, Judicial District 3A, Section 126, Judicial District 4, Section 127, Judicial District 5A, Section 128, Judicial District 5B, Section 129, Judicial District 6A, Section 130, Judicial District 7A, Section 131, Judicial District 7B, Section 132, Judicial District 9A, Section 133, Judicial District 8A, Section 134, Judicial District 9B.
Oh.
Do you need me to slow down, Mr. I got to slow down for our
reader. Okay? You can go fast.
Okay. At Section 134, Judicial District 9B, Section 135, Judicial District 6B, Section 136, Judicial District 8B, Section 137, Laramie County District 1C, Section 138, Sweetwater County District 3C, Section 139, Natrona County District 7C, Section 140, Judicial District 6C, Section 141, Judicial District 9C, and Section 142, Judicial District 4B. Mr. Chairman, with respect to those, what we had as they went back through, each of these judicial districts generally consist of the judge, one administrative assistant, and sometimes if they have more than one court, they may have two judicial assistants or one administrative assistant in two different locations. Someone else to help with a paralegal or that type of thing, another secretary, a legal assistant of sorts, and then sometimes a judicial clerk, which is usually a recent graduate of law school, although there are some that have been there substantial periods of time. Other than that, there was not cuts in personnel, so what they did is went back, and in almost all cases, they simply cut back on various personal services and telecommunications and contract services. Those contract services are oftentimes pulled out of the interpreter funds that they have to hire contract interpreters in certain cases. The one difference that I would point out to the body, and so you'll see generally those are around $11,000 to $12,000 in those reductions. The one I would bring to the body's attention is Section 142, Judicial District 4B, which is the judicial district that we expanded and put over, I believe, in Sublette County, if I remember right, in Pinedale. And well, that was a newly approved, and so there, that one is actually an increase in spending. And what that is when we approved the increase in judicial salaries last time is to accommodate that salary increase for the biennium, and so that needs to come back and fill in from that. That's really the only difference between that and the other districts.
Would there be any discussion on sections 120 through 142? Would there be any discussion? Senator Schiffer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I haven't figured out the exact percentage, but it's less than 1%, it looks to me like, on many of these budgets for the reductions. And my question is, was there any discussion, for example, along the lines that, particularly where you've got multiple judges in the same location, looking at whether they can share a judicial clerk, and that's the law-trained person that as I understand, does most of the grunt work for them, the legal grunt work. Well, I guess all legal work is, well, who knows. But these are relatively high-paid. You're hiring a lawyer full-time. Is there any potential that if you've got three judges sitting there, instead of each of them having a sub-lawyer underneath them, to share that or any of those kind of economies? And what worries me a little bit is every single cut we're seeing in judiciary, in all of these judiciary budgets, is the delivery of service to their constituents, to all of us that use the justice system. Whether you're going to shut down those little courts in those smaller counties, whether you say, okay, if you don't speak English, you don't get justice. But we never see where they try and do more with less. State agencies seem to, I think for most part, to have caught that drift. But the judicial branch doesn't seem to be quite there yet. And I just wonder, was there any discussion on saying, can you really handle, and we have funded judges, I think, very well. We have made sure we have the proper number of judges. All those things. And we've added staff to them. And some of it's quite expensive staff. And whether three judges need three judicial clerks, or whether three judges can get by with two judicial clerks, or maybe we rotate them every 2 years you get a judicial clerk and buy a fishing license if you want. I don't know, whatever they do. But it seems to me we have not had the scrutiny in the judicial branch that we have had in the executive and in the legislative branch. If you look at the cuts we've made in our legislative budget, it doesn't seem to apply to that branch, and I just wonder why, other than we might be in front of them someday, and who knows, we've got to take care of them then. But I don't hear that discussion. I'd like to hear it.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Anybody else?
Senator Nicholas. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on that topic, you know, the way you save resources in the courts is by eliminating judges, and you go look at those districts where there's not a full-time FTE work, and, you know, in the years past, judges travel a lot. But what we've seen, frankly, is that every time a new community builds a new courthouse, they want a judge, and both bodies have supported it. And so once it's constitutionally established or statutorily established, it's very difficult to remove those. With respect to the question of how do you staff a judge and whether or not each person should have a single law clerk and a judicial administrator, what we call JAs, my conclusion, and I think most lawyers that practice in the court believe that to have an efficient judge, the judge needs a full-time law clerk because the amount of research and writing, if the judge is finding himself having to do that, what happens is that your decisions then take longer to issue. So that instead of getting a decision in 3 or 4 months, pretty soon you find yourself getting decisions in a year or 2 years. And frankly, back in my experience, and I think the other lawyers of practice in this remember when it was not uncommon to have a hearing and get a decision 9 and 8 months down the line. And I could tell you when you have that and you have clients coming, calling you and say, look, I've got business decisions I need to make. I need to know what that decision is. I need to know whether I'm going to hire an employee, fire an employee. I need to know whether I'm going to lose the lawsuit or not. I need to be able to budget it in. Time is the enemy of most constituents. So I share the concerns that you take a look at the number of law clerks. But to say that we're only taking the areas that have where you see the actual service delivered, the real service delivered to you is the time differential between the time that you have your decision rendered, an opinion written, and obviously having an opinion that's well drafted. And that's you take the law clerk away, what happens is you simply can't get that work done. And I can tell you that in law firms, generally speaking, one partner can keep about 2 associates full-time. I think actually if you wanted to, you could actually lower the number or reduce the number of judges and increase law clerks because a judge could do even more if you had law clerks, but we never looked at it from a law firm model. We could have done that by saying we're not going to create new courts here and there. The judges that we have are going to have more law clerks and they're going to travel more and spend less time actually drafting opinions and having their staff do it.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, along that line, I share my colleague's concern from KC, but also a question from my good colleague from Albany County is talks about the delay and the time. Is there any metrics to measure to compare the output and the productivity and the length of time it takes to render these decisions from one court to the next court to the next court? And the reason I ask it, I mean, we passed a school accountability bill a few years ago. I'm wondering if we need a committee for judicial accountability to make sure that we're getting our bang for our buck.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And a couple things. First of all, just to correct something I misspoke, Section 142, Judicial District 4B, was actually instituted a new judge in Sheridan County and Johnson County. It was indeed brought by a bill, I think it was co-sponsored by the good senator from KC and the good senator from Sheridan County. The increase that you see in the almost $61,000 in Section 142 was actually to accommodate the new judge in Johnson County. But going back to that discussion, and if you go back and you look, one of the things that we used in Section 142, Judicial District 4B, the new judge in Johnson County, is a classic example of exactly the metrics that are used, Mr. Chairman. If you go back and remember, you probably saw, although you may not have paid much attention to it when it came through on the bill that expanded that last session and created the new judgeship there, but there's a weighted case study. And they take each type of case, and the Supreme Court has done this, the circuit courts do this, the Supreme Court looks at this very carefully, these judges keep track of their time, and they what they've done is they've kind of gone through and established a standard, if you will, of each type of case, whether it's domestic relations, whether it's a criminal matter, whether it's the different types of cases that come before these district judges, and they weight them on how much time should it take for them to carry that case, and how many minutes are in that, and what's the load, and how long should that take. And based upon that, and compared the number of cases and categorized the types of cases that they receive for each one of those, to determine what the caseload is for that judge and how much time that is. And they use those metrics to determine when and if you need an additional judge. That information is provided to Judiciary Committee and others and appropriations, I believe, on a regular basis. It's available for asking from the Supreme Court. It's been provided to this body on numerous occasions. So there are metrics that look at that. And ultimately, there are not new judges are generally, and new clerks as well, the district court clerks and the clerks in the Supreme Court, are all weighted on these weighted case studies. And that's the metric that determines if you need additional personnel, if you need a new judge, if you need a new clerk. And so those metrics are there. I believe the accountability, and ultimately the accountability, for the most part, then, once you get past those metrics, rests with the people of Wyoming who have and vote on judicial retention. All of us have seen those in our counties are voting on whether to retain judges or not, and occasionally the voters of various districts have decided those judges shouldn't be retained. And so I believe that there's accountability in two respects, Mr. Chairman. There are detailed, weighted case studies, and then there is, of course, the voter retention elections or the votes that occur on a regular basis throughout our state.
Thank you, Mr. Majority. Floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Direct answer. The answer is yes. At the federal level, they actually have a sophisticated docketing system where they monitor every case when it's filed, how long it goes. They monitor every decision, how long it is. They have averages, and they keep track of it. They discipline judges if they're too slow. As it turns out, Wyoming has one of the fastest federal dockets in the United States, and we call it the rocket docket. We do have a rocket docket, and you go there, you better be locked and loaded because you're going to have your case to trial generally within 9 months, unless it's a complicated case. We kind of measure our state court dockets off of that. And so in most instances, you can get trial beginning to end within a year unless you have some reason not to get there. And I'll tell you, nationwide, that's if you're practicing in Texas, Illinois, it might be 3 to 4 years before you even get to see that first door. Now, you're going to see if you were to look at, we don't actually do that monitoring. And part of the reason is because we have district courts that are constitutionally independent from the Supreme Court. So they keep track of the dockets. And the Judicial Advisory or the Judicial Committee that oversees does, if there is a problem, they'll look at it. But there is a certain amount of autonomy. And one of the areas where you see the longest dockets in Wyoming is in Campbell County. And that's because they don't double stack most of their cases. To move cases along, judges typically stack them and double stack them, sometimes triple stack them because they know most cases are going to get settled or set aside. But in Campbell County, they voted out a judge who was double stacking and doing night hearings. So the new judges came in and said, look, we were going to respond to that by not, they're doing mostly single stacks. Frankly, I don't approve of it. I think I'm not living in Campbell County, and Campbell County voters kind of said, this is, we'd rather have slower docket time and make sure that, our cases don't get stacked. It's easier for you as a litigant to know that you got a date certain and it won't get moved if a criminal matter is double stacked. With respect to, times have changed. I remember it used to be, I used to live with, when I was a younger man, a a judge, and I can remember him being criticized for long cases because two ranchers were fighting. They litigated, and I think he held on to that decision for 5 years. And I came down to the AGs as a young man, and people said, how could you sit on a case that long? And I went back to that judge that I used to live with, and I said, you know, how could you sit on a decision for 5 years? And he said, you know, if I had decided that case, they'd have just fought some more. They didn't need to have that decision to set, and I just saved them a lot of money just sitting on that.
I happen to know that judge, and he was my neighbor, and he had sons that were pretty rough. Further discussion on sections 120 through 142. Further discussion. The motion was Senator Perkins' motion to adopt sections 120 through 142. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. Sections 120 through 142 have been adopted. Senator Perkins, section 151.
Chairman, I'd move section 151. This is the district attorney for Judicial District 1 here in Laramie County. What you see there is the district attorneys are funded by the state. You see we adopted the agency and the governor's recommendation to reduce the agency budget by $84,000. The reduction of costs consists of mostly of operating expenses and various contract services. Usually, again, it's interpreters or other types of individuals, sometimes in private separate investigators or other services that are out there. They went back and did that, and ultimately they think they can still, everyone, they're compressed budgets, but they think they can carry out their job with that reduction.
Okay. Discussion on Section 151, District Attorneys. Judicial District Number 1. Any discussion? You heard the motion, Senator Perkins' motion to adopt Section 151. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That section is adopted. Section 157, Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move Section 157, District Attorney for Judicial District Number 7, which is in Natrona County. Would give a shout out to our district attorney who recently had a serious health issue, and we hope he's recovering well. Same issue here. The JAC adopted the governor's recommendation to reduce the agency budget by almost $100,000, and also there was also a transfer to the ETS as a part of the IT consolidation statewide. Same types of this was consists of one person, and they actually eliminated a position up there. And if I remember right, it was someone in the Victim Services Division. But ultimately, that's what they did, and that's the cut that they made, and would ask for the body's favorable consideration.
The discussion is on Section 157. Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question of the good member of our Appropriations Committee, wondering if that's related to we have an outstanding children's advocacy program up in that neck of the woods, and wondering if that is the liaison that works with that particular unit, or maybe you could clarify that for me.
Anybody else? Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if it's. I do not believe it's related to the certain children's advocacy project that we're referring to up there. But what this is the victim and witness coordinator, and they've got more than one person in that staff. But what the victim witness coordinator does is they do some services for victims, provide helping conduct counseling. But really, what the other thing they do is they check back with witnesses, try and arrange to make sure that people are showing up for trial, know when events are, know when hearings are, make sure that they've got the witnesses there, make sure whether they're victims, whether they're third-party or independent witnesses, or whether they're parts of law enforcement. So they do that. Some of that arrangement will fall squarely on those individuals and on the attorneys and others who are trying to get those cases through. So there is some reduction in service there, but it's what happens when we go through these budget. We're asking people to do the same or to try and continue to do their jobs with less people, and so that's where they're at.
Okay. Further discussion on Section 157. Further discussion. You heard the motion by Senator Perkins that the Committee of the Whole adopt Section 157, District Attorney, Judicial District Number 7. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 157 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next section is Section 160, County and Prosecuting Attorneys.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Section 160, County and Prosecuting Attorneys. What we have here in 160 is this is where all the other county and prosecuting attorneys around the state are funded. It's a function, it's a combination, a contribution by the state to those offices, but certainly a substantial, if not a majority, of the costs are, as most of all of you know well, are shouldered also by the counties. There is a reduction here. The AAC adopted the governor's recommendation to reduce the agency budget by the amount you see in your cheat sheet or in the bill. And this reduction consists of statutory mandated salary reimbursements to counties, which requires a statutory change and budget language modification, and that bill is winding its way through. And often what you have is there's a reimbursement to counties of I think it's 50% or $30,000 per attorney, whichever is less or greater. One or the other. I don't remember exactly, but that's the change, and that's the budget.
The discussion is on Section 160. Any discussion? Seeing none, the question is to adopt Senator Perkins' motion on Section 160, county and prosecuting attorneys. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Section 160 has passed committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move the committee of the whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. What is your pleasure? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. The motion is carried. I don't have a vice president. I don't have a president.
The vice president just walked through there. Why don't you grab Eli?
It's good to be king. Senator Bebout, can you take the chair and get us out of here?
You need to just get up and so I can move to recess. Please.
Don't.
Don't be messing with this, the Grim Reaper.
Mr. Majority Floor.
Is that clear the desk? Or do you have some messages to read?
That clears the desk.
Mr. Vice President, I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Put the motion, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion clears. We're in recess to 2 p.m., but before we do we have any announcements?
Sight.
Any announcements? Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
The birthday boy wants the microphone.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Members of the Senate, there are some birthday cake out there. Help yourself. Enjoy it. Hope you gain a few pounds.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee number 3 will meet in 30 minutes after the noon recess to pick up House Bill 170, Streamline Sales Tax Direct Mail, House Bill 188, Investment of Public Funds, Interest-Bearing Deposits, and House Bill 195, Engrossed Rail Tax Exemption.
Further announcements? Senator Geis.
Adjournment tonight. Take up House Bill 13, Engrossed Livestock Revision, House Bill 25, Simulcasting of Paramutual Events, House Bill 108, Engrossed Food Freedom Act, House Bill 155, Engrossed Burn Under Violation Restriction, and House Bill 156, Engrossed Movement of Livestock in Emergency Situations.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Vice President, I was just standing up to reach for something on the top of my desk and wasting time until the chairman of the Judiciary Committee could find his meeting schedule. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Burns, for covering from our colleague from KC. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, it's kind of a tag team back here. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice President, your Judiciary Committee will meet Wednesday, February 6th at 8 a.m. in S1 to pick up House Bill 21, Engrossed Peace Officer Immunity. Mr. Vice President, you recall we carried that over from Monday's session. House Bill 40, Eminent Domain Wind Energy Collector Systems. House Bill 216, Engrossed Deadly Weapons in a Courtroom. And House Bill 8, Engrossed Child Abuse Reporting Requirements, if time permits.
Further announcements?
Thank you.
Senate's in recess until 2 p.m.